Call the meeting to order. Before we get started, I want to extend a big thank you to all the folks that were involved yesterday in the retreat. All the regents last night could not say enough about how professional and impressive and thought-provoking the whole day was. And to President Ransdell, Dr. Capps, and Julia, and all the others, outstanding afternoon. And I may want to say it makes your head hurt, but it was very informative. With that being said, we'll move to the oath of office for our new student regent. I told her that we usually keep the acceptance speech down to about 10 minutes.
Do you solemnly swear that you will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, so long as you continue a citizen thereof, and that you will faithfully execute to the best of your ability the office of member of the Board of Regents of Western Kentucky University according to law? And do you further solemnly swear that since the adoption of the present Constitution, you, being a citizen of the state, have not fought a duel with deadly weapons within the state, nor out of it, or have you sent or accepted a challenge to fight a duel with deadly weapons, or have you acted as second in carrying a challenge, or aided or assisted any person thus offending? So help me God. Congratulations. Welcome.
We have at least two new unit heads sitting back here who say, what?
Don't fight a duel.
No duels allowed. Nikki, congratulations. We're honored that you are now a member of the Board of Regents of the Governing Board of Western University. And it's my honor to put each new regent that takes the oath of office to defend their regents in. That is a very special emblem of your service to this board, this university. And only members who serve on this board have this chance. It's very special, something that I hope holds a special place in your life forever. So congratulations. We're proudly and we're proud to be a member of the Board of Regents.
Thank you.
Special presentation on the agenda.
That's it.
Next matter on the agenda is the roll call. Secretary Dennison.
Dr. Philip Bale.
Present.
Ms. Cynthia Harris. Mr. Freddie Higdon.
Present.
Mr. Gil Johnson.
Here.
Mr. James Kennedy.
Here.
Dr. Patricia Minter.
Here.
Mr. David Porter. Mr. John Ridley. Ms. Nikki C.
Here.
And Mr. Larry Zelke.
Here.
Declare we have a quorum. Lawfully can conduct business. The next item on the agenda is the approval of minutes. I understand there might be a little difference on the agenda item that you may have, but the minutes we are approving this morning are April 18, 2014. They've been distributed to you electronically and hard copy.
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
By Mr. Zelke.
Second.
Second, yeah, second.
They're dueling seconds here, but I think Patty beat you.
Okay. Well,
second by Patty. Any other questions? Call the vote. All in favor of approval, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
No? So approved. Next, we will move into our agenda of the committees. I will remind the board that we met on June 27th in our committee meetings and discussed each item on the respective agendas, with the exception of item EX1 under the executive committee. This item is exempt from the consent agenda and will be discussed and voted on separately. Regent Bale, Academic Affairs.
Thank you. As you mentioned, we had lengthy presentations and discussions on these items at last month's meeting. And we have on the agenda items AA1 through AA8. And is there any of those items that anyone would like to remove for further discussion?
Regent Bale, I would like to remove AA7 and AA8 for further discussion, which deal with the celebration of our new University Distinguished Professor and our newest Emeritus Faculty Member.
All right.
And Regent Bale, I have some remarks I'd like to make before we go to the agenda, if that's possible.
All right. So any other items anyone would like to remove from the consent agenda?
I don't want to remove it, but I just have a question about AA2, the degree in paralegal. As I was going through it, it looked like they were to hire someone. Is there someone with a law degree who teaches those courses?
There are two someones. There are two people.
Are they,
that's not my department, but yeah.
Are they attorneys?
Yes, they are. Both of them are attorneys.
Okay. I was wondering. I don't want to remove it. I'm just with
okay.
General right. question.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions? All right. If not, we will entertain a motion for consent agenda for AA1 through AA6.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed likewise. Motion passes. And that takes us to a University Distinguished Professor item.
Before we move on to that, can I make a few? Okay. For the last year and a half, we've been extraordinarily busy in academic affairs preparing what's called the compliance report for our SAC COC, Commission on Colleges. It's due September 8th. I'd like Sylvia Geico and Rich Miller to stand to be recognized. They've put in some pretty immense amount of work putting this together. We're in the closing stretch. We're moving it onto the website. I'd also like anyone else who's been on the numerous SAC committees, I see Michelle over there, to stand and recognize you as well. It's been an ordeal, Patty. So thank you. And to the board, our on-site visit will be April 7 to 9 of 2015. That's when the on-site team will visit the campus to follow up on various issues. We'll be here for 3 days, and we'll give you more details later, but if you could mark those dates, that would be wonderful. A couple of introductions I'd like to make. First, I'd like to introduce Craig Cobain, our Executive Director of the Honors College and Chief International Officer for Study Abroad, who will introduce Ms. Lori Monarch.
Thank you for this opportunity. Let me introduce Lori Monarch, who will be our new Director of Study Abroad. Lori comes with us with a very distinguished career in education abroad, and I can just list a couple of her experiences. She was coordinator of off-campus studies at Middlebury College in Middlebury, Vermont, director of global education at Dickerson College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, most recently director of overseas studies at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. She has a bachelor's of arts in international relations and German area studies from Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts, a master's of education in student affairs administration from the University of Vermont. She was a recipient of two national scholarships in her day, the Congress Bundestag and a Fulbright. So as you see, brings a wealth of information on a number of university priorities. She's been with us now 10 days. So we're looking forward to a great long time with her. And she's here with her husband, who is a Kentucky native and has just retired from the Air Force after 27 years. Thank you.
Laurie, how's that Southern accent working out for you so far?
I'm trying.
Yeah. Laurie, I would like to ask you to come back to the October meeting or the September Academic Affairs Committee meeting specifically. A lot of progress has been made in our study abroad, and the numbers are impressive. But once you get the handle on those numbers and get a sense and really get your legs under these new duties, I would like for you to come back to the board at its September Academic Affairs Committee meeting and just give us a broad brush first impression of our study abroad programs, what you see as the challenges and opportunities, and in an initial first 90-day, 6-month, first-year focus for you. Thank you.
And just to tease the board on that, we are up again for the third year in a row. We're the only public university ranked in the top 40 nationally in terms of number of students who study abroad, and we continue the rising trend. So I'd also like to ask Dennis George to introduce Evelyn Ellis. In front of you, you have a leaflet on Evelyn. Just remember the E's. Evelyn Ellis, Eton, Eastern Time Zone. And Dennis.
Dr. Rinsley, I am absolutely delighted to introduce from across the room Dr. Evelyn Ellis. Dr. Ellis, a new day is dawning in our Fort Knox campus. We are so delighted to bring her on board. Most recently, she comes from South Korea, where she was actually over all of the Department of Defense Independent Schools. She's associate dean, but has been associate dean at the Coast Guard Academy. She's had a number of appointments, including dean at University College before. But she has the kind of personality that really is engaging. She doesn't meet a stranger. She will be the face of WKU Elizabethtown in that community. And I think she really provides the energy and the enthusiasm and the ability to work with people that we really, really need in that community. So just so happy to bring her on board, and know we're going to see great things out of her in that community.
Welcome, Evelyn.
And in September, we'll try and bring another couple of recent additions who unfortunately couldn't be here today. Lynette Breedlove, our new executive director of the Gatton Academy, and our new registrar with some significantly large shoes to fill, Tiffany Robinson. I will introduce her to you at a later date as well. And with that, I thank you.
All right. Thank you. I believe Bridget Minter would like to make some comments.
Yes, actually, before I make a few comments about Dr. Beverly Segrist, who is up for approval this morning as our newest University Distinguished Professor, Dr. Rich Patterson is here from the College of Health and Human Services, and I believe he has a little bit of biographical information as well, and then I'll have some follow-up comments.
Okay, just to give you a little information about Beverly. She came to Western in 1977 as part of our associate degree program in nursing. Over the years, she became the coordinator for our graduate program in nursing. And as many of you probably already know, our master's degree, we have three concentrations in nursing. And we have our new doctorate of nursing practice, DNP program, that graduated our first class in May. And Beverly was instrumental in the development and approval of that DNP program. And this program has been a gleam in her eye for many years. And for those of you in healthcare, with the Affordable Health Care Act in place, physician extenders such as nurse practitioners are going to play a major role over the next years to play out. And so this program that she helped develop is really going to be instrumental in the healthcare in Kentucky, because a lot of these folks stay here in Kentucky. She's also very active with grants, research. She is the chair, has been the chair of seven dissertation committees outside of nursing. So Beverly is a very big student advocate, and that's why we're all here, is for the students, and just really a great person. Actually, as I was reading through her vita, I began to wonder when she sleeps. She's co-authored a book in nursing, and she's also contributed to several other nursing textbooks. She was appointed by the governor to be on a policy committee to develop policy, healthcare policy in the state of Kentucky. So she is, we're really pleased in the College of Education. This is our first distinguished, Health and Human Services. Because we are, this will be the first distinguished professor for our college.
Well, and I'd like to add to her distinguished resume that Dr. Segrist has certainly been a very devoted public servant. University service is one of the most important and one of the most invisible things that we do. It is time-consuming and incredibly important. Dr. Segrist has mentored hundreds of nurses, as Dr. Bale told us at the committee meetings, including one who works with him. She's changed lives for people in the nursing profession throughout South Central Kentucky. And my work with her, 6 years on the Faculty Handbook Committee, serving with her, I was always impressed with her attention to detail, with her diligence in difficult situations, and someone whose advice and comments I always value very, very much. So again, the invisible work of the university is just as important as the visible work, and I'm delighted to see Dr. Segrist honored today as the College of Health and Human Services' first university distinguished professor. And with that, I'd like to move for approval, Dr. Bale.
I will accept that as a motion, and do I
second?
Second. And before I call a vote, I do want to reiterate what I said last month as a recipient of one of the first 9 doctoral products of that department. I can attest to the quality of the people that are being produced, and Dr. Segrist has certainly had a strong hand in that. So we need more people like her in the healthcare profession. With that, I will call for a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, likewise. Congratulations to Dr. Segrist. And last item is AA8 for Emeritus Faculty. And I think Dr. Mentor may have something to say about that as well.
And once again, I'll defer to Dr. Patterson, who I believe has some prepared biographical statements, and then I'll have a few things to say.
Okay, Dr. Higgins is in our, was, I should say, in our Department of Public Health. And he came from Western in 79 and was promoted to associate professor in 81, then full professor in 87. He's a very, very prolific researcher. He has over 30 publications, chaired scores of thesis committees, and assisted many, many students in obtaining master's degrees throughout the years. He has is one of the most well-known in the Department of Public Health and has done quite a bit for students and for the university. He's been on many committees, and we feel that this particular nomination is justified.
I first met Dr. Higgins when I was Senate Chair and landed on the Benefits Committee in the middle of a healthcare crisis. And he was there as our representative, not only from public health, but he was in the healthcare administration program. And there are people you meet sometimes who help make difficult things very simple to understand at a time that everybody on the table needed to understand them really quickly so they could make wise decisions. And for me, Dr. Higgins was that person. Served well on the University Benefits Committee, really helped to define our self-insured plan, and taught us all so much things that we would never have known as faculty members and staff members who came out of a very diverse group of departments. We would never have known that otherwise. And what I also learned is that there was a generation of students who also went into healthcare administration in this area who are similarly in his debt. So happy to place his name forward and second, and make the motion that he be granted emeritus status this morning.
I have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second from Regent Johnson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. We have a few information items before we wrap up the academic committee. And Mr. Provost, I'll ask you to...
Can we do it? First, the new edition of the Faculty Handbook, the 20th edition. See to my right is Dr. Margaret Crowder, past Senate Chair and ongoing Senate Chair for another year. To briefly review the process, then I'll ask Margaret to speak up. Substantive revisions to the faculty handbook can be proposed by any individual. They go to a committee. That committee is chaired by Mac McCarroll, who I believe is on his way. And after that committee has reviewed these recommendations, they are presented to the University Senate. And after a concurrence of the Senate, they're forwarded to me for approval, and they go into effect July 1. The faculty handbook is essentially a static document for 1 year, and throughout the year, revisions can be proposed. We had a number of issues this year, a number of changes. The three most significant ones, we believe, are in your packet. The concept of a lecturer appointment, the promotion committee composition for both promotion to associate professor and promotion to professor, and a remark about editorial revisions and when they can be incorporated, and right on cue, here's Mac. So I'll hand it over to Margaret and Mac to discuss this.
Mac and I talked about it, so Mac as faculty handbook chair is probably the best person to speak about the changes that happened this particular year.
Good morning, everybody. I apologize for not reading the email about switching the meeting room. Summertime, we had a good year. I think we ended up with approximately 11 recommended changes that went to the Senate and through that process. Three of those were kind of sent back, two for more review, and one didn't make it past the provo. So the substantive changes were really related to two areas. One, conflict of interest with regard to promotions and tenure and things like that. And also, we corrected a policy that prevented the changes that were recommended during the academic year from not going into effect for another full year. But beyond that, it was a pretty good process, I think. Provost Emsley was very helpful. We've already had a meeting and started looking at some things that we'll want to take a run at next academic year. But I would say that the handbook is stronger and a lot cleaner now. It was, and that's no reflection on my predecessors. It's just part of the ongoing process. So, if anybody has any specific questions, I'll be happy.
Sure. I'm curious about one thing. Let's say somebody is here, a faculty member is here last year, and then you change the faculty handbook. Does that faculty member who was here already get grandfathered so they can rely upon the old handbook as opposed to a new handbook that may have a different restriction or a condition?
He's nodding his head in the affirmative, meaning no, they're not grandfathered. Yes, they operate under the new handbook.
Okay.
Which is one reason why it's a very active process, Regent Zelke. I mean, these things go through. It's a faculty committee, as AAUP prescribes. It's a faculty committee, goes through the University Senate. And there are many things over the years that don't get out of the University Senate for that reason, because these are exactly the kind of things that people are thinking about. And I think the process really does represent the way that shared governance can work at its finest.
One other thing about the further review, one of those items involved the creation of instructor ranks, which the handbook committee, I think, feels is a really strong step in the right direction. I think most of you know that it would be very difficult for us to get along without our instructors. And a lot of them carry the terminal degree, but the Senate felt like the draft that we sent forward needs just a little more review and maybe a little more discussion and input. So hopefully we'll be able to move that along during the next academic year. Just procedurally, the way the rules are set up, the outgoing chair of the Senate serves as the chair of the handbook committee, which is one of the things that I'll be working on changing. it's never been easy to do that because when Kelly stepped down, she took an administrative position that precluded her from chairing. And then we went back to some old chairs and nobody really wanted to do it. And then I took over this year and thought, this is going to be great. I'm off the hook at the end of the year. And then Margaret went and re-ran again. So, but it'll only be a semester. First order of business will be electing a vice chair since I'll be teaching in the spring term at Harlequin. Yeah.
Cool.
Looking forward to that and looking forward to somebody else doing this.
Well, it sounds like you've done a fine job, and we appreciate the effort.
Well, it's surprising. I've told folks that I found chairing handbook a lot more stressful than chairing the Senate. I mean, the Senate, I just went in and did stand up and everybody applauded, and that's fine. this is very tedious and very important work. So, appreciate all the help I got from the committee, from the provost. Dr. Miller was very helpful. I think it was a good process, and hopefully that'll be maintained.
Well, maybe when you're in England, you can go to Hyde Park and do some more stand up.
I lived in Hyde Park in Tampa. That's the closest I've been. So.
Okay.
But if they do that, I might jump.
Yeah, they do.
It's all for me.
Our second item. Before we get the enrollment report, a very important element of our enrollment is transfer students. And I believe Brian will introduce Sharon to discuss it.
As the provost said, the transfer piece is a growing market for us with enrollment. That KU has a good, strong history in what it's done in the past for transfers, recruiting transfers, supporting them. So I invited Dr. Dennis George and his regional chancellor. What is your exact title?
Associate provost for regional
higher education. And I've mentioned in other board meetings that successful EM operations have to operate with partnerships. We have a very strong partnership here with Dennis and the regional campuses, as well as student affairs, where it just doesn't work. We kind of have a foot in everybody's camp a little bit. So we want to talk with you just a little bit about transfers. There's a lot of exciting things going on there and have been going on and will continue into this fall and this school year. So Dennis, you want to get started out?
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. We appreciate the opportunity to update the board on some of the most recent transfer initiatives, and we are doing some things that are having a positive effect. Most specifically, we're really trying to reach out to those community college students while they are community college students, get them thinking and dually identifying with community college and WKU. Just some things that we put on the slide here. We now have a joint admissions website, which of course is the way that college students find information. Joint admissions has been operating for a good while, but we really haven't had that web presence. Now we do. We have a beautiful website that was professionally designed, thanks to Sharon and others getting that thing put together, so the students can have a landing pad if they're interested in joint admissions. Dr. Ransdale has visits already scheduled on his calendar for this fall. He will visit every one of our eight community college partners, joint admissions partners. He will go there, he will interact with the president and executive team of that institution, but he will also, more importantly, begin interacting with those students, because those students that are jointly admitted, he's their president too. So he is there, Dr. Gary Ransdale, president of WKU, your president, and interacting, engaging those students, giving them, again, that dual identity, already getting them thinking like a Hilltopper, and then also encouraging other students to become part of that process. And again, those visits are already scheduled. We have a transfer family weekend, the first time we've done this, but these are for students who have already transferred to WKU this weekend, a weekend this fall. Again, Dr. Ransdale will be meeting with those students and their families. They'll go to a ball game and so forth. Should be a really fun, engaging, exciting weekend. The joint admissions agreements themselves continue to grow, continue to get a lot of interest. We have eight signed agreements so far with community colleges in this region particularly. And then Dr. Ransdale will be going on August the 5th to Evansville, Indiana to sign our ninth joint admissions agreement with the Ivy Tech Southwest in Evansville. So those agreements, again, very, very popular. Just came yesterday, as a matter of fact. A group of us went to yet another KCPCS institution who heard about joint admissions and asked us to come and talk about it because they wanted to be part of it. So it was really, really growing. We've had two transfer summits recently with KCPCS. We had one in April with the chief diversity officers from KCPCS. There were 22 individuals that participated in that from KCPCS, about 10 schools represented. Lots of positive feedback. And then in June, we had another transfer event that we hosted right here in this building, which just blew them all away, how beautiful it was. But this primarily focused on the advisors and the student affairs personnel from our partners. We had over 90 individuals that participated in that. All of our partner schools were here, plus a couple more. So, again, very positive. So the message here, we could talk about some other things, but the real message here is we are making this concerted effort to reach out, engage, talk to, be part of, establish a presence on these community college campuses to track these students. And again, having them go ahead and identify, even in their first semester with WKU, thinking like a Hilltopper, even though they may not physically be here yet.
Dennis, let me follow up one point on the transfer weekend, the thought behind that. We are taking quite a different approach this fall to our what have traditionally been a parent-family weekend, which was one weekend, usually early in the semester, around a home game. Well, we're doing that, but we're doing it for new students, freshmen. Parents will have a parent and family weekend because they've got one mindset as a parent. Their son and daughter's been away from home now for a few weeks. It's quite a different dynamic, and we want to have a particular message to that group. Later in the season, we will have a parent and family weekend for upper-class parents, a different mentality from the parental perspective, and a different, slightly different message for that group, persist and finish. And then the third dimension will be, for the first time, as you see here, a parent-family weekend for families, parents of transfer students only, where a completely different mindset. Some of those parents, they may have grown comfortable with their son or daughter being at a KCTCS institution for 1 or 2 years or more, but now they're off on this whole unfamiliar dynamic and this big university campus and quite a different focus with our emphasis on parents, new students, continuing students, and transfer students, and all sets of parents are different. So that's the philosophy behind our approach to parent and family weekends this year. And so we were anxious to study the data, study the numbers, see how this works. But we feel like this is quite a different initiative. And quite frankly, this seed was planted when I called Dan Polino to come and do what he did yesterday with the board. He's on the Parents Council at Notre Dame. And I said, okay, Dan, tell me what Notre Dame does different than what we do. And so we talked about 30 minutes about different things. A lot of the things are the same. But Notre Dame does this. And I said, tell me about that and how's that work? He said, it's really effective for these reasons. And I said, we're on it. So we always say we're not too concerned about what other campuses do. We're focused on us. But there are always ideas out there that other people do well that we can incorporate to improve what we're doing.
More and more of the activities ratchet around retention, and this is just going to be greater retention. In past years, and it's hard for Slide to see, Sharon, I believe you may have cards that you can float to the board. This is the Community College Transfer Scholarship Program. When I first arrived, we really just had basically one scholarship opportunity for transfer students, and through the support of the provost and Ann Mead and the president, we looked at it and thought, okay, we have to be competitive here. This is a growing market. How can we do it? And we put in a tiered approach ranging from $1,500 at the 3.0 GPA all the way up to $4,000 with the 40 GPAs to match those. And we are seeing very positive responses with this. When I first arrived, the transfer students would say, well, you don't have transfer scholarships. That's what generated some of this conversation. You've heard lots about the first-time freshman scholarships in recent board meetings or past board meetings, but this one's working, and I believe you give this a little more time, and you're going to see this bear out. It's already bearing out this fall, and again, it will in January when the transfers come in, and those cards hopefully have floated around to you, kind of describing that. That's for KCTCS students, which are our main transfer feeders. We also have a $1,500 scholarship for other transfers that may not be KCTCS coming from there as well. You'll see in a minute the bulk of our transfers are coming from the community college.
Brian, may I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
How early does this get in the hands of the prospective transfer student?
That is in the hands now. It's in the hands of that's at least that document's about a year old. And with what we're doing with our transfer center and Dennis's team combined with ours, the KCTCS folks have this blanketed everywhere, and they're very familiar.
We have a letter going out shortly from me to every KCTCS students in Kentucky with 40 or more hours. We want you at WKU, and here are the scholarship opportunities and so on.
The students that I've talked to in this situation, you know, you can't really say in 2 weeks before you come to WKU and say, I missed that extra $4,000 because I didn't work very hard. But if we got this in the hands of those early, then they could look at this and say, well, you know, I'm a 3, and, you know, if I really work hard, I can bump that to a 3.375 and get $4,000. I mean, that's an incentive early on versus here's what you can get because of what you've achieved.
And Ricky Ridley, one thing we're doing with the joint admissions and our visits from the admissions side and then Dennis's side as well at the regional campuses, we're making those regular visits, and that's part of that regular dialogue. So they're getting it early.
Thank you. Joint admissions, they can literally be admitted to WKU and a KCTCS institution at the same time on the same application. And once they are, then that first semester, as Dr. Meredith said, our advisors begin contacting them and getting that information to them.
Thank you.
Absolutely. This slide shows you the trend, and so the question is, are these efforts doing any good? This is the applications and census for the last 5 years. And you see that it's about a 20% increase over fall of 2009. And that may not sound like a lot, but the thing that to recognize here is this is at a time when KCTCS enrollments are tanking. Some KCTCS institutions have lost 20% of their enrollment. And for us to be increasing and even maintaining during the last 3-4 years is really, I think, pretty remarkable. And this year, I think, comparing right now to a year ago, we're up by 14.6%. So we are having an impact with this outreach.
Just following applications, you see the enrollments by different kinds of schools. You see very clearly why we're focusing, in Kentucky at least, on the KCTCS schools and supporting the joint admissions. And that's where it all is. You also have your four-year Kentucky, the UK, the U of L's of the world, other Kentucky institutions, private, you know, the centers, the transies, all of those. And then out-of-state schools, the states that would drive that would be Tennessee, Indiana, and Ohio. But again, the reason we put in place this slide here is really, this is where we need to be. This is where we need to be developing those relationships, at least trying to regain that Kentucky market share. So that, and also it's trending right now for the transfers to be up for this fall. Sharon just alluded to that.
Brian, question. I don't know if you know this number or not, but it'd be useful after yesterday's discussion. All of those out-of-state school transfers, how many are international students? We arrived at out-of-state school X. Very few.
Okay.
Yeah. Those are strictly domestic.
Oh, these are just domestic students
domestic.
On the chart.
Okay. Domestic.
Okay.
The message here is these are good students. When they come, they tend to stay. This is the percentage that we retained. They came here in the fall of 13 and came back in the spring of 14. So these students are retained. And also, we didn't put this up here, but these are good students academically as well. When you run the data and you compare the GPAs of these students their last 2 years at WKU with the GPA the last 2 years of native students, the transfers are as good or better. So these are well-prepared, good students that come to us.
Well, and just looking forward, and I want to introduce Dr. Russ Curley, our director of the Academic Advising and Retention Center. Russ is... he runs all of our undergraduate, or administers all of our undergraduate advising. But Russ brought to us a wealth of transfer knowledge in his past and former lives, and really the genesis of the idea of the transfer center, if you will. I have to give Russ quite a bit of credit for that. It's opening this fall, and a lot of schools say, well, they have a transfer center. It might be one person in all of us talking to the student. No, it's one-stop shop. The student can come in, they can bring their transcript,
visit with Russ and his staff. They can see how those courses are going to articulate out, how they'll fit with Gen Ed, Upper Division, all those good things, and get admitted and registered all in one big suite. I think that that is an absolutely, positively the right move to make. That's happening now as quickly as we can make that happen. Transfer advisors will be there to support Russ and his team and the growing needs of the joint admission students for our partners. Again, couldn't do it without Dennis's folks in the regional campuses. Their staff and their, I call them split admission counselors slash advisors. They're partnering with us to make sure those transfers are addressed and taken care of out in the regions, you know, out in the forefront. And with a marketing public affairs office this year, we've had a whole new marketing campaign with Stacy and Robin and her bunch. On trying to make sure that we're appropriately marketing the, all of our transfer services, but particularly this new transfer center. This is a new thing. Other schools in Kentucky have centers, but this one really is a one-stop shop. They walk out of there, they could, in theory, be registered. So, and that's going to, we're going to continue to build upon that, and I thank Russ for his guidance and leadership on that as well. And that's kind of just a snapshot of where we are with our transfers. That's just one of many populations that enrollment management is working with to build, you know, the optimum enrollment profile for us.
Are you giving these to high school counselors too?
Mm-hmm. They all also have them as well. We have the recruiters, admissions staff, and Dennis's staff are also, there's overlap between the two in the high schools.
I raise my hand like I'm back in school. I have two questions. One, do you actively solicit students from the proprietary schools? Number one. Number two, what do you do when a proprietary student comes in and says, you know, I'm at this University of Phoenix group, I'm at some other group, HTA colleges in Louisville, and they say, but I want to get into a real institution of higher learning, mm-hmm. like Western. Can you accommodate them in any way, and do you?
We you know, the proprietary schools are harder to get into, clearly, because we can't, when they're in to those schools and recruit them, but when they inquire of us through online, through Dennis's folks, yes, absolutely. We sit down there with them, and they could absolutely go into Russ's center at any given time and be advised, and there'll be some online opportunities as well for them, which would fit with that. You said with proprietary schools, it's a whole, it's just a different dynamic.
That's right. Well, you know, the small print that when you see advertisements on a proprietary school that says, credits may not be transferable. Do you transfer certain credits, and how do you make that determination?
If we look at the accreditation, regional accreditation, if it's like a University of Phoenix, for example, they are regionally accredited, no problem at all with transferring those credits.
Okay.
If they're not accredited, it's a lot more, it's a challenge, because the credits don't automatically transfer. Okay, so there may be some opportunities for the students working with faculty, depending on what kind of credit it is. They may have options, for example, to get credit through testing, right? So if they've had a certain course at a proprietary school, if there may be an option that they could test to prove that they have equal ability by taking that course. But I should say it's a tough haul. It really is, and it's really tough when a student comes in and says they spent a lot of money and none of their credit transfers. We work with them as well as we can. We try to get as much credit as we can, but sometimes it doesn't work out as well as the student might.
You know, that may be another market. I mean, you're looking for students all the time, and another market might be to, you know, stop the mentality of these students at the proprietary schools that there's no way they can transfer in. And what I'm hearing you is you work with them. I think that is not common knowledge. I think the common knowledge out there in the field is that if you're a proprietary student, you're locked out of real good institutions of higher education. I think if you made that known, that we have a policy here and we will work with when you look at it, I think it may blossom into something.
Very well, Mike. I like it.
One of the success stories, kind of different, Larry, from what you're asking, but similar, is this past year, WKU, I would say, led the way on the mid-continent.
That's what I was going to ask about.
And
yeah, how that
we took a team, name and all, but from Russ's team to financial aid, scholarship, admissions, enrollment management, and set up shop two different, if not three different occasions mm-hmm. at mid-continent. And met with those students, admitted them, advised them, and registered them on the spot. And last time I looked, that number was around 70, somewhere in there, give or take 5 or 6, but I think it was about 70, which was pretty good. And the Mid-Continents, the PR and goodwill that came out of that are just priceless, because we're getting, still getting feedback from that.
So that would have fit in that slide, that one category. It wasn't a big category, but it was from other institutions in the country, not KCTC.
That's right. Okay.
Was Mid-Continent an accredited institution?
They were. That was part of their challenge.
Yeah, yeah. So easier.
They lost their accreditation.
Right.
So that's that was unique.
Right.
A unique circumstance.
And then when they,
right. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. And that may, that story may still not be finished. You may still net out a few more.
Right. Yep. There was still a conversation for many of them. Mm-hmm. You know, if they were one class away from graduating, you know, to teach out and such things. There were other programs that we guided them with there, but most of them were not. Most of them had just started or halfway through. So they said, hey, WKU, you can accommodate, do online, which we did, get advisors, we rock and roll with it.
So. Sure. Okay.
And just to give, just moving forward, if you like, to the enrollment kind of update or just a snapshot, we're about, 35 days out, 37 days out from the first day of class, somewhere in there, 5 weeks.
Four weeks.
Time-wise, and you're having fun. I think you'll have an updated profile sheet coming around to you. Just give us sort of anecdotally where we are. Again, we're trying to mold, not trying, we are molding this class. This is the past year we've had aggressive recruitment initiatives going on to mold the class from Ms. Hunter and Dale Brown's efforts and all the team, and then we'll have a new director of admissions starting August the 11th. But just some tidbits here that you may find of interest. Applications for admissions are up. That we believe that will anticipate by the time all the dust settles, you know, an increase in undergraduate full-time Kentucky residents. Again, we've been talking about full-time equivalent students. Since there's trending that part-time has been backing down or not coming on as strong as it would have in the past. And the part-time students are impacted by two things. We believe, one, the economy, and two, they're going to KCTCS schools, which is not necessarily the end of the story because we're there with them, walking them through that and taking care of them there. Transfer applications, as Dr. George mentioned, are up 6%, as well as those enrollments. For the fall, and usually you don't get your bulk of transfers until the spring semester, but fall transfers are up as well. Other positive good news, and I think this is important to mention these scholarships as well. A lot of money and time invested in this. These are our best and brightest students. All categories are showing, up in all of them, from presidential all the way down to Spirit Makes a Master, Red Tile, and our minority scholarships, as you can see. Offers and acceptances for this fall, 14, spring 15, are up as well. Minority student awards have never seen these numbers, 122% increase in those scholarships offered, and even 187% accepted. And we're going to continue to mold and shape that as well. I just think that's a great stat, and that's a byproduct of things, enrollment management, minority recruitment committee, where's Richard Miller, Dr. Miller's in the room, his efforts and support, everyone, so that those are helping us there. Probably the most important piece on this page, and I realize enrollment and the bottom line number is very important, then the idea that we've been talking to the board over the past year about shaping the class would be the ACT. I know it makes the Chief Academic Affairs Officer very happy to see that this ACT profile for our full-time baccalaureate students has improved. We're not done yet. And that's that top row there is probably the most important, going from 22 to 23.54. And that would be another increase in the ACT for...
Oh, yeah. Last year at the retreat we mentioned, we showed a graph. It showed the average ACT score was up, you know, a similar amount, but, you know, 6 or 7 percentage points, tenths of a point from the previous year. And we remarked that our goal would be to get into the top one-third of the 67th percentile of ACT scores nationally. 23.54 is the 71st percentile. So we have, you know, reached that goal and then some. And as Brian said, we're shaping this class. Not only does the size of the cohort and the quality of the cohort affect freshman numbers, it affects retention down the road, and it affects revenue to the extent where headcount, as I've indicated before, is no longer the, you know, straightly correlated with tuition revenue. So with more full-time resident students, perhaps less part-time, that shapes up very well in a variety of areas.
And our international students as well are trending to be, you know, the last 2 years we've seen 43% growth in international students. The IAM and ISO staff are telling me the basic now in mids and I-20s, the I-20s being the document that gets them into the country to be here to study, are all up and are expecting somewhere in the neighborhood of 200-plus increase there. So, and that's a significant, significant leap, not only in enrollment, but as the provost said, in revenue. The revenues piece is looking very comfortable. I don't know if Gordon wants to say any more about that, but that's a good thing. So we have about a month left. The ATPs, one stat that Gordon and I talked about, there are 4 ATPs left in August. And last look, and Sharon, correct me if I'm wrong, we're up about approximately 100 RSVPs for those ATPs than where we were last year. So in other words, the enrollment story is not over. And you learned yesterday from one of the students, who I found it very interesting, the young man's name was Shooter, I believe. he did not apply to WKU until mid-late August, so the story's not over. And beyond just the recruiters, one thing I think has been successful and it's going to continue to see us through to the first week of class is having our professional staff, our advising staff, our recruiters calling these students. 2 reasons that's important. 1, you're going to get mom, dad, or grandmother, or someone that's running the household on the phone to talk about the WKU story. And I think that's making some of the difference here for us. And plus, again, this is the most aggressive year, or 15 plus months, if you will, we've done in a long time. Grantsville, did you have a...
No, we're taking watching it every day, and it's a serious business, but it's complex and part art and part science, and we're trying to apply both at every opportunity and make the right moves here as we head down the stretch.
Now, Director of Admissions begins.
I do want to add one thought. Brian mentioned part time, mentions it in here. Mm-hmm. The part time number is a huge challenge for every university.
Absolutely.
KCTCS, I'm not going to predict, but it's a serious challenge, and we'll be down hundreds of part-time students as we were last year, and that's just the market these days in higher education. And if we can make up that differential with full-time students and international students and out-of-state students, I'm delighted. I don't want to generalize, but better students, better retention, better graduation rates, better degree productivity, better quality, for the most part, of course there are exceptions to that generalization. But last year we were caught off guard a little bit as we headed into September with the part-time dynamic. This year we were tracking it, reading it, and making every attempt to offset it. And this year we're also focused first on the dollars, then the quality, and then the numbers. And that's how we're tracking it this year.
And the SAC COC mode, SACs requires that we define our assessment of things. And everything we do for a reason. And there's a beautiful loop here where you identify a problem, research how to fix it, try something and see if it worked. And the problem we identified this about a year and a half, 2 years ago, were students with, you know, GPAs about 3.2, 3.3, ACT scores in the high 20s, low 30s, who were applying, being accepted, and not enrolling. We've showed that chart. There's a huge dearth of students who weren't eligible for the presidential scholarships but were going elsewhere, presumably because other places were offering them scholarships. So we introduced these Spirit Mixed and Master Red Tile scholarships. That's the third step of your assessment process. The fourth step, has it worked? Absolutely. From 224 acceptances last year to 318 this year. If you recall, when you approved the budget, there was a significant increase in institutional funds for scholarships.
that will be paid back and then some, in the sense that these accepted scholarship students will be here as full-time, full-tuition paying students with a scholarship. And that number, having grown, is the wonderful end to that assessment piece. And so perhaps the next stage, as Gary says, is to, okay, let's, the next problem is part-time students. Let's assess that, see what other folks are doing, put something in place to improve it, and we'll pick that up down the road. But I'm very pleased of what happened with these Red Tail Spirit Mix Master Scholarships. It's worked very well.
And all of our regional campuses, Dennis, I know we're focused on this because a lot of that part-time numbers is reflected in, on our regional campus numbers, and so it's a paradigm shift for them as well.
It's kind of a three-year rule, too, on the scholarships that the provost has mentioned. Of course, we want to continue that on, you know, into future years as well, but any new change like that usually takes 3 to 4 years to get out, mm-hmm. out into the world. Regent Member, I think you had a question.
Yeah, first a comment and then a question. I wanted to thank you for getting that information for us, which we'd ask for, but that's very instructive. So good job. And the rule of three is actually very interesting to know about as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Going back to the international students and hoping they'll help stabilize the fiscal environment, who are these new international students? By what I mean is how many of them are coming through Navitas, how many are coming through other programs, and from what countries are they coming? What does our profile look like in that piece?
Well, the usual market, a significant increase in students from Brazil this year, as it turns out.
Okay.
Almost 100. Navitas enrollment continues to track the projections we've been making. students who are yet to finish the Summer Pathways program, have yet to enroll.
Right.
We're tracking those, and I don't think Doug's here, but we are right on the numbers we've been projecting for some time.
Okay.
A trend that we're seeing internationally, that we're seizing the moment, and Raza Tuana is very astute and very effective in these negotiations. Countries that are wealthy from resources, particularly fossil fuels, oil, are beginning to put a lot of money into scholarship programs to send students abroad to study because they don't have the higher ed infrastructure by and large. And you saw some of the data yesterday that Catherine from IBM showed us. Major scholarship programs are being initiated and countries are building universities, but they can't build them fast enough to meet the demand. And that trend's going to take 10 or 20 years. It'll take a generation, but there will be a time when the pipeline for international students will be less significant, and we need to anticipate that in the next 20, 25 years. But in the meantime, we're going after those countries that are pumping money into education. They're preparing their students well, but they don't have enough colleges and universities to meet their own country demand. So it's a matter of supply and demand, and they're creating significantly government-funded scholarship programs to send, and we're creating contracts with those governments, with those embassies, to send us 25 students, 50 students, 30 students, 100 students. The Brazil program is just that exactly. So they all arrive at once.
Is that right? That's outside Navitas, right?
Yeah, this is Raza's work.
Okay.
Now Navitas is rocking along fine, and they're meeting their numbers, and we're just letting them do their thing. And we do cross paths with Navitas in the international marketplace often, and working well together. But we're focused on international recruitment, and again Raza and his staff. Raza's where today?
He's heading to the Mideast.
He left day before yesterday, I think, or yesterday maybe. At any rate, we're focused on where the opportunities are, but the phenomenon that's in play right now are government-funded scholarships. And that's what the Saudi Arabian is. These are all coming on the King Abdullah Scholarship.
Right. And is that still the biggest single producer?
Yeah. We'll be well over 400 Saudi Arabians this year, and so you have to understand the marketplace and work the supply and demand. Raza is very astute and very effective in multiple languages. China, I'm going to be hosting an event on December 6th, a Saturday afternoon in China, for students, and we have some 30 agents that are now under contract working for us in China. So a different dynamic there, but again, far more capable students than what the universities can possibly accommodate. That will change, but it's going to take time, and in the meantime, we're going to make hay.
And truly, to build on one final comment on what was discussed yesterday at the retreat, was the spirit of hospitality in place, and we have international entities coming to us now, with Rosin team now, saying, hey, we know that you have great programs, you take care of those students, you handhold, could we send you 30 or 40, and then 30 or 40 ends up being 75 or 80, and then it ends up being 100+. So it goes back to that spirit, and that's the domestic, international, wherever, but it's very important, and it's extremely important to those international families.
Sure.
And is it not right that the U.S. demographics are going to start turning, the millennial numbers are going to go up here in the next couple of years, I think?
In Kentucky, it's 3 or 4 years away. In some neighboring states, it's happening now.
So stay tuned. We'll be back with you in another month or so, and
you
just got dialogue.
Thank you for that report.
Brian. And Mr. Chairman, I believe that concludes the business of the Academic Committee.
Thank you, Dr. Bell. We'll now move to the Executive Committee, which in Mr. Porter's absence, I will chair. You have one item, executive item number one, that was not presented to the committee previously and will need to take up.
I have my Deb Wilkins pad on for this. Deb has asked me to review this briefly for you. As part of our SAC COC reaffirmation process, they have a series of new principles that were not there before, and we were apprised of these only recently. This one refers to Principle 3.13.1, which states that any university, as part of its accreditation, must communicate with any institutions with which it is affiliated. And we have over 100 various agreements with various institutions, both domestic and international. And SACS advised us that the way to do this was for the president to write a letter to each of these institutions containing our vision, mission, and statement of purpose statements. And we reviewed our statement of purpose. We found that it had references to things like extended campuses on our regional campuses. It had references to the Bowling Green Community College, which no longer exists. That statement was most recently approved by the board in 2007. So in preparation for this, we have drafted a proposed statement of purpose, which contains the essence of the original one. There's not a lot of huge changes, but we've emphasized things like when the old statement talked about developing professional programs, well, we now have some extremely well-developed ones, EDD, DNP, DPT, and so forth. So this would be a new statement of purpose that would go into our catalogs, our publications, and most significantly at this point in time, in those letters to those affiliated or partner institutions. I present it to the board for approval of the proposed statement of purpose.
Move approval of executive item one.
I have a motion by Mr. Zelke.
You have a second?
Second.
Second. Second by Mr. Ridley. Now call for discussions.
Yeah, I read it and I liked it, but subsequent to some of the discussions the last couple of days, particularly with Bob Polino and his group, the word applied seems to be something that is becoming on people's radar, and we saw a great example of it at the Corvette Museum yesterday with the quad cam. And so when I read through it, I thought, gee, it'd be nice if we could have applied in there somewhere. So in the next to last paragraph, where it says improve instruction, increase learning, and provide applied solutions toward high quality service to the state and nation. So I would like to suggest that we slip a couple of extra words in there that has.
Okay.
Because, you know, really, as a theoretical physicist, you maybe can still appreciate the importance of our university actually doing things that are meaningful and get applied.
We've used the word applied. We've used the word engaged.
Yeah, it's in here. I'm reading it, which is the university encourages applied research.
Yeah,
public services in support of economic development, quality of life, improvement in education, all levels. Mm-hmm. Isn't that do it?
University encourages engaged research.
Yes. It's the new one, Dr. Jill, the proposed statement of purpose is the one we're asking you to...
I like the old one better.
Hmm?
I like the old one better.
Okay. Sorry.
That's the old one, all right.
Is this... So Philip is suggesting that the next to last sentence and the next to last paragraph include the words and provide applied solutions toward high quality service. You want to add three words, applied solutions toward,
mm-hmm.
between provide and high quality.
Yeah. Just a suggestion.
No, I like that.
You'll have to move then to amend the motion.
Yeah, you can amend it.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I, based on yesterday's discussion, Gordon, I too have a suggested edit. In the first sentence of that paragraph, the university encourages engaged research, comma, particularly at the undergraduate level, comma. That is something that is a growing emphasis for us. That is a bit distinctive and in keeping with our context as an institution. So, comma, particularly at the undergraduate level, comma.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two edits.
Oh, I'm sorry, Richard Bell, is providing solutions...
Applied solutions toward.
Applied solutions toward.
Provide applied solutions toward.
Got it.
High quality service. So two edits on the floor.
That would be two amendments. Someone needs to move that.
Now I'll move to amend the motion to add those two edits.
Motion for amendment.
Second.
Seconded by Dr. Bale. Another call for discussion. Are these? Is this an item that has to go before the faculty, senate, or
others? I have shared this. Margaret left. I did share this with Dr. Crowder in preparation for bringing the board. I had not a time to go before the full senate. It will be discussed at the first meeting of the Senate Executive Committee, which will happen first Monday in September, at which point they'll review this. But our compliance report is due prior to that.
This is one of those things that we learned in the SACS accreditation process just recently and felt like we needed to amend our current statement. And the calendar is the thing we're trying to accommodate here.
Would it be politically correct to for our motion make it approved subject to their approval as well, or we just go ahead and approve?
Ratification, perhaps. I did share this proposed statement with Dr. Crowder, who indicated her concurrence with it, but for formality, she wants to take it to SEC, which is appropriate in September.
I think a contingency is extremely appropriate here because, I mean, just here at the table, which I think is a wonderful discussion, you know, this board is seeing some things that could make it tighter and better, and I think you have to have, I mean, this dictates what faculty life is going to be in the intellectual life of the university. I think you have to have the concurrence. And I think you'd come out of there, I don't think there would be significant disagreement. I think there would be a lot of this kind of editing that makes it tighter and better. But I think you need that concurrence and that buy-in going forward.
What would happen if he needs to submit it and they don't concur?
We can have,
well,
I mean...
Change it again.
Okay,
we submit this,
yeah.
And if there are future tweaks, we can bring it back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it also puts Dr. Crowder in an incredibly difficult position if everybody says, well, why in the world did you not run it past us and say it was okay? I mean, it puts her in a position that she really should not be in. So,
I'll make another motion to make it subject to concurrence.
Yes, subject to... subject to concurrence of the Senate Executive Committee and University Senate.
Okay, that's the motion. Another amendment.
Okay. So it's a good contingency, and I'll second that.
Okay. All right, we have a third amendment on the floor. It's been moved and seconded. Is everyone clear on where we now stand on the language and the context of the motion?
Point of order. Are we voting on the amendment and then the motion?
We got to vote on the third amendment.
Okay.
We got to vote on the amendment. Yes,
and just
there are three amendments.
Yeah. And if just for the record, it could be read back, please. Yeah. No, just I want to make sure I understand.
I knew they were going
yeah.
to get you.
Well, no, just, yeah.
Get our court reporter in here for the same.
Yeah.
You want me to try, Julie, or you want to?
Go ahead.
Okay.
I didn't get it down fast
motion
enough.
The motion or the language and the statement we read?
I guess the motion, and then.
The language of the statement, I believe, would now say the university encourages engaged research, comma, particularly at the undergraduate level, comma, and public service, and so forth. And then five lines below that, increase learning and provide applied solutions toward high quality service to the state and the nation. And the motion itself mm-hmm. says approval of the revised WKU statement of purpose subject to concurrence of the University Senate.
Those are all three. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We okay with the understanding?
I am.
Can we vote on all three amendments at once?
No, you have to vote on them separately. You have to vote on the last one first.
All right.
The contingency.
Okay. Last one, number three, was the concurrence item. Call for that vote. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? No. Unanimously approved.
We have another point of order. Did that amendment have to have a second? That third one?
It did.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moving to the second, which is the language of applied solution. Call the vote. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, no. Passes unanimously. And then the First Amendment was President Ransdell's language, particularly at the undergraduate level. Call the vote. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. So approved unanimously. Now we need the overall motion.
Right.
Okay. Calling the overall motion at this point. Call the vote. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, no. So approved unanimously.
And that should be able to get on the agenda for committees, because the whole Senate process will have run by the time the committee agenda is set. So, or this could come back as an information item to the committees, just so everybody knows that the Senate approved it, or they didn't.
Yeah, we'll use this statement of purpose and
plug it in
letters
now.
At this point.
Plug it in now. And
SEC will meet September 3 or whatever the first Monday is.
And the Senate will meet
September.
The
we should be able to bring it back to the board.
Yeah, yeah, it's actually going to line up perfectly for the board schedule, because Senate meets third Thursday of the month. So we'll have it.
Regent Johnson has informed me that I've reversed 1 and 2 on the vote. First item was.
If everybody's agreeable, you're okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
If there's anyone who doesn't like it, then we have to go back.
Okay.
Is there anyone that doesn't like it?
No objection, sir. Without objection.
All right.
You do a lot of things with unanimous agreement.
Okay. Now, it's a little complicated when you get over one. You know, 1, 2, and 3 is by my favorite. Is that it?
For my part,
no other items on the executive committee agenda. Yeah.